Tyrell's swords will make me king. Rowan and Tarly and Karen will make me their king, with axe and mace and warhammer. Tarth arrows and Penrose lances, Fossaway, Coy, Mullendore, Estermont, Selmy, Hightower, Oakhart, Crane, Caswell, Blackbar, Morrigan, Beesbury, Shermer, Dunn, Footley, even House Florent, my own wife's brothers and uncles, they will make me king. All the chivalry of the South rides with me, and that is the least part of my power. My foot is coming behind, 100,000 swords and spears and pikes, and you will destroy me? With what, pray?
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Actually, trying to read that list out loud, I realize that is actually kind of an absurd number of minor houses for Renly to be listing off.
Yeah, I could hear the strain in the last few names that you were saying.
Yeah, I did not test read that out loud beforehand, so I had kind of like mentally banked for like four of them, and then I kept reading the line, and I was like, oh shit, this just keeps going.
Now we just have to wait for the Dr. Seuss book listing all the house names.
You know, I would kind of enjoy a like Dr. Seussified version of Thrones, like as a graphic novel or something.
We talking like old school Seuss or like new school Seuss?
I mean, how new school can it be? Didn't he pass away like 30 years ago by now?
Well, sure, but like his war comic Seuss or like Green Eggs and Ham Seuss.
Yeah, he passed away in 91. So, yeah, basically 30 years ago.
Comparatively new school. My bad.
Yeah. Lord, do I feel old now. And I'm not sure which version. Whichever take would be funnier in light of Game of Thrones content.
I feel like it'd be more charming to have like a Green Eggs and Hands style Game of Thrones.
Oh man, like a Green Eggs and Ham version of, geez, I don't know what of like Littlefinger trying to like offer his wares to people, and they keep refusing. Like, no, I don't want them, Littlefinger.
Part of me want to attempt to say how that would go, but I don't want to embarrass myself tremendously. So I will save everyone from the scar that would be that.
These are the moments when I desperately wish we had Daryl or Kyle still actively involved, because those guys would just be, bam, they would be on it. Oh, well. Instead, we will press on with serious topics for episode 430 of The White Book. I'm Will, also joining us, who I'm not sure has spoken at all this episode, is...
Roy.
He sounds so excited. Thanks for being here, Roy.
I would love if that's the only thing Roy said.
It will not be the only thing I say.
Yeah, Roy will get going. That's like a Kyle move. Just say like his name and then just like log out of the recording.
And then play Iron Throne for like 4 hours throughout the whole episode.
While washing dishes.
I just like the idea of you scrubbing through all the audio and see Roy and then like nothing. I just want that to be the thing.
Roy enjoys this discussion too much to be that dedicated to a joke, I'm pretty sure. As he leaves me hanging.
Proved you wrong.
Perfect. Love it.
Can't always get what you want, Will.
That is true. And this week's episode is, I think, proof of that. But you can get a lot that you want. This week, we are discussing the brand new Joust Restricted list put out by the Conclave this past Friday. Can't always get everything you want because I want melee. But hey, not many people are playing it right now, so I guess that's on the back burner. Regardless, we're gonna mention what's there, what's happened, what's going on, what's coming up. Props to Roy for sticking it out through this discussion again after doing a pretty sweet interview with Aaron and Grandmaster, who almost called him an Archmaster. Grandmaster Schoenthal on the Second Son, or sorry, the Bootleg Second Sons a couple nights ago. So I definitely recommend folks check that out.
Yeah, you can find it on the Beyond the White Book YouTube channel. Chris gives some really good points from the point of view of the Conclave, which is kind of really why we did the episode, was to give people some direct insight into their thought process.
Yes, indeedy. And I thought that was a really nice follow-up on top of this article, which also explains some of the reasoning on and off. That was something that always seemed pretty hit or miss with FFG. So hopefully everything goes smoothly from here. I know it seems like the Conclave already is learning quickly from mistakes. The first restricted list announcement they put out back in April was kind of stumbled a little bit, I guess, in just literally being a list at first, and then an explanation not coming for, I forget, several days now, not a terribly long time, but several days.
4 days, because I think it came out on Monday, and we recorded the episode on, like, Thursday or something, and it had already been, as we were recording the episode, they clarified things.
There we go. That does sound right. So, yeah, that's not a crazy length of time, but this time around, we got everything posted and dropped all at the same time, so I call it a win. Progress, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the article was pretty good. I think it did a pretty good job of laying out some of the justification behind the things that they did. I think the only thing actually that the article doesn't super do well, but their graphic does, is explain how the pod system works. That's actually another reason why I wanted to interview Schoenthal, was to have an extensive statement of how pods work, because it's not like, I think L5R operated on a pod system, or maybe it was one of the LCGs, maybe it was Star Wars, operated under like a pod restricted list. But instead of, you know, some pod systems are, if you pick from pod A, you can't pick from pod B. That's not how it works. It's more, if you pick one of a subset of cards, for example, the Annals of Castle Black, you have two additional cards that aren't available to you to be legal in your draw or plot deck. And that for the Annals example, that's Wheels Within Wheels and Old Town Inform.
It basically, and this, I do admit it took me a second to really catch this concise of an explanation. It's basically if you say use Yoren as your restricted card, Three Fingered Hob and Kraven also count as being on the restricted list. Mm-hmm. Like, along with all the other restricted cards. I think at first, all the back and forth of terminology and stuff made it feel more complicated, but it's just the other cards also count as restricted.
Yeah, it's pretty... it's pretty straightforward when you think about it and in practice. I think what we need to do is come up with a better, more easily grokkable way of referring to it than pods, because I don't even think it was quite what was initially like batted around by Hanno and other people who supported pods. I could just be crossing over so many different conversations I've had about various restricted lists over the last year. But I think... in practice, it is relatively easy and straightforward to understand. If you take X card, cards Y, Z, AA, BB, whatever, are not available to you as well. Just like if you picked Wheels within Wheels, you couldn't pick Yoren as additionally to be in your deck.
Yep. Or, well, actually, that's a poor example since you're on the restricted list. But if you picked Raider from Pike, you could not pick Yoren.
There you go.
I was hoping you'd pick another poor example, like a loyal card.
Oh no, I had the list pulled up in front of me. So I could be careful with that. I do like it, and it's I think reasonably well represented in the restricted list document, where going to have to keep calling it pods for the moment, where the pod cards are inset, like indented over with an arrow underneath the card they're associated with. The only thing, I don't know if this would improve it or not. I understand putting all the new cards and changes in red, but something kind of throws me off about having a just full restricted card and the pod cards in red when I glance at the list. I don't know if there's a better way to do that or not, but overall they are pretty straightforwardly organized. Man, that seemed like a very awkward sentence. I don't know. That said, the one other tiny coloring qualm here, I do wish we had, I'm going to throw this suggestion out for future Conclave restricted lists. When things come off the list, it would actually be really handy, I think, to have those listed as a recently freed or something like that in green or blue, some kind of quote good end quote color.
Kind of like what they did with the band box.
Sort of, except I was also just looking at the band box and realizing, okay, well, actually, should the band box be red? Because it's a change that was made in this restricted list. I think, theoretically, that everything in that box should probably be red.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these are very minor things.
Oh, yeah, the list itself looks cool. Like, my complaint is, like, some of the cards that are, or most of the cards that are being freed have an arrow next to them. And so my initial thought was the arrows were cards being removed from the restricted list.
Oh.
Because, so, like...
Right. Well, and a lot of them kind of were, right? They were freed, but they were put into a pod. But not quite everything. So, yeah, that's a fair point. That is... Yeah. That could be just a teeny
bit. That's super minor.
Yeah.
I think the reason why they didn't do that is so many cards came off the restricted list that it's best to just be like, this is now the list. Rather than being like, this 12 cards came off, these 8 cards are now on, 6 of them are also tied to, it's just such a gigantic fundamental restructuring of how it works, that it's best to just try to get players to just delete all of their old knowledge. Don't worry about what's going on, but don't worry about what's going off. Just, this is now the restricted list.
Weird. My brain just comes at it from the opposite way. With a lot of cards, like, I want a clear list of them all track. If it was like one card, then I'd be like, okay, whatever, I can remember that change.
Well, I guess the point is here is it doesn't matter what used to be on the restricted list anymore, Will. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just have to take this list as it is. Do you know what I mean? It's not so much about a couple of cards coming off, a couple of cards coming on. It's like a fundamental restructuring from the ground up and spending intellectual effort, like saying what came off is not as important, I think, as making as clear as possible what's on.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I guess
only one of those things can get you disqualified from a tournament, right? Is putting an illegal card on your deck. Thinking that Old Town Informer is just always restricted. I can't. Or one of those stupid, you know, ladies cards that didn't end up getting restricted. I don't know. Which one is it? I don't know. Melia Bitterbridge. There we go. Thinking Melia Bitterbridge is still restricted and not playing it. And some friend later having to explain to you it's not restricted anymore, whatever, that's fine. But accidentally putting Crown of Gold in your deck because you didn't realize it wasn't restricted and getting disqualified from a tournament, that's much worse outcome than people thinking some cards are on it that aren't on it. Do you see what I'm trying to say, Will?
Sure, sure, yeah. I'm not saying that this is bad. I'm just, these are things that I didn't even think of till now. I'm re kind of reviewing and going, oh yeah, you know, it would just cover an extra base of clarification. Like another one that occurred to me just now, whenever you mentioned Old Town Informer, right? So all of these cards are on the list are broken down by house, right? But the entry for Old Town Informer, which is not a neutral card, appears under the neutral heading because the card it's in a pod with is Annals of Castle Black, which is neutral.
Hello.
Similar thing with Drowned Disciple and Desert Raider and Martell and that sort of thing. So I just happened to think just now, like, oh, you know, if something there denoted what faction those cards were from when they are listed kind of out of place, like, oh, that would be a nice little extra nod. Like, it's not a game breaker. I'm just thinking of extra little bases to cover.
Yeah, very, very reasonable.
That said, I guess let's move on from the I was about to say physical formatting of the list, but it's not really physical, obviously, the digital layout, the page layout, there we go, of the list. And as you said, Roy, this is a huge restructuring of how this is handled, because it's actually really two lists now. It is both a restricted list and a banned list. And we added the concept of pods, which wildly reworks how we've handled this before. And I'm kind of curious what you guys think, because this type of restructuring, one of the common arguments that I saw in pushing for this type of thing was that in the end, it would free up some of that mental mass, some of that headspace needed to track and manage these type of things on a deck building and playing level. Because as you started to tweak these, you could drastically pull down the number of cards that you need to address. And I'm kind of curious if you guys think that this list is a good step in that direction, or if we had to do a huge shakeup to get the basis in place, and then we continue to only make tiny tweaks in the future. Because I double checked, the April restricted list had 53 items on it. The June list. Yes, has less restricted cards, like flat restricted. We went down to 37, but total entries, we went up to 59. So is that kind of inevitable, or is this moving in the direction of trimming the headspace needed?
I mean, it has to be inevitable. Just, I mean, naturally, when they start creating cards, there's going to be a moment where future cards are going to be more powerful than anticipated. Like, the Conclave's doing a great job at the moment, but we're all humans, and so they're going to create a card that's going to be good, and so it's going to be restricted, and it's going to work with another card that'll inevitably have a pod with that. Personally, I'm not a fan of the pods. I get why they exist. It's a more restrict light, so it's definitely solves problems without erasing the cards themselves. But overall, I mean, I think we've had this conversation privately. The Netrunner way of handling it, just having one list that just bans everything, is my preferred way to do it. But I mean, I don't think that this is a poor job. I think it's definitely a step in the right direction for like the general scheme of handling the cards going forward. I don't foresee it getting out of hand like it was with FFG, where they'd print a card and then act surprised when they had to restrict it. I definitely don't foresee the Conclave doing something that egregious.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of wondered, because like theoretically, once you introduce a banned list, then you can do things like you look at the Annals of Castle Black pod, right? That has Wheels and Old Town Informer in it. But like Annals has definitely been a problem card in the game. Now, some of the cards that were banned were pieces of that, but also like if we banned Annals of Castle Black, then we can completely remove entries for Wheels and Old Town Informer, thus trimming the overall list, right? Or at least that was what I thought the headspace of going this direction was going to lead us to.
Yeah, there's a couple of really important points, I think, about this that's important to keep in mind. I think that there's all... One, restricted lists over ban lists leads to more cards being played, or at least theoretically allowing cards to be played, versus just straight up banning them and, you know, unprinting them, basically. And so I think that's kind of was the goal of, you know, FFG, and then the Thrones community has just sort of like really internalized this, like a restricted list over just straight up banning things. And I think there's also another thing that's obvious. The reason why I think Annals of Castle Black was not banned is that it's a champ card. Looking at their ban lists, none of those are champ cards. So I think it's a price to pay for keeping champ designs in the card pool, as the, you know, the greatest prize in the game is that Annals will always, if we're going to keep champ cards legal, Annals is always going to cause problems. And this pod system, the pod system actually, I think, is the best for a card like Annals, which is kind of thoroughly meh as a competitive card, but a fun Shaga card, except with these certain interactions. And when these interactions are discovered, you just slap that card on in a pod with Annals, and it doesn't affect anything else but people who want to abuse Annals. Which is already a playstyle that the Conclave, FFG didn't want to encourage, and the Conclave doesn't want to encourage. I think the other thing that's important of why I think right now having a small restricted list and reducing the restricted list to something like that's a horse I have no real, you know, side on, but I think it's impossible right now is, again, we're still months away from new cards being printed by the Conclave at the very least. I would probably put it at least 6 months away, and that is not me with any inside knowledge. I am not involved with playtesting for the Conclave. I have not been consulted or anything like that, but I would probably put it 6 months away. And to keep the game fresh, the only tools available to the Conclave are restricting cards. And the only way to balance the meta is restricting or banning cards. So we're like, I think a fool, it's a fool's errand to expect the restricted list to shrink significantly. And the headspace it takes up to get smaller until they start printing their own cards. And at that point, one, they can print answer cards to problematic interactions, and or they can power creep it all up, or whatever solution they choose to come up with. Cards can start being unrestricted because, you know, either there's new answers, or the power level of the format has gone up, or a variety of other things. But I think while we're in this like liminal space, cards are just going to keep getting restricted to balance and the format and keep it interesting to players.
Yeah, that's definitely he's correct pretty much in all of that. I mean, there's no way it's going to shrink. My only devil's advocate argument about keeping champ cards legal, wouldn't it be a better honor to have the only champ card banned?
That's assuming once you open that floodgate that only one gets banned.
I'm nowhere near ever getting it. I'm not in that elite club, and I'm not adjacent to that elite club, you know, of the world. So I don't really have any sense of what that honor would mean for Alex Hines, or Jakob or anything like that. So I think it's probably better to just, if you're going to keep the restricted list system, which it seems that this is what the Conclave is going to do, and that seems to be based on the community feedback, what the community wants. I think that keeping champ cards legal is the best way to do it. I think that's definitely the case. But I mean, there's room for disagreement, but I think that it's kind of the best for problematic champ cards. That's probably the best solution.
Had a great idea now that we're thinking about champ cards and potentially banning or restricting or whatever. I think we need another big shakeup, maybe in, you know, several months or whatever, but, you know, something big. And we institute, okay, we're going to need to workshop this name. We need a better name. But I'm going to go with maybe like the unrestricted list or something like that. And it's where you actually get a bonus if you're willing to play certain, let's say, underpowered champ cards, right? Like if you play a full play set of Archery Range or Arrogant Contender, then you actually get to choose two restricted cards. Man.
Yeah, it's time on... Spoke volumes. Yeah.
not even bitter laughter, just silence.
Couldn't think of a rebuttal.
Couldn't think of a rebuttal. Not even a, hey, that's a bad idea. So it must be kind of good.
Well, like Magic does the unstable thing, but like that seems more plausible than just using bad cards.
I'll float that one directly to Hanno.
Yeah. Probably a good idea.
Yeah. And then my idea of banning Annals was completely facetious. I just like the idea of having one champ with one banned card.
I mean, I probably just think you should just ban Annals, but you know. That's clearly not what
drains a lot of design space.
What they want to do. So, I mean, I don't. You know, there's the Club of Champions, and I don't know if that would be good for them to just ban champ cards. So we need to. It is important to make sure that the people who earn Throne's highest honor get their just desserts.
Sure enough. So how about we turn to kind of specific entries. Now that we've had this huge change, right, and we have things that have come on and off, and there's kind of stuff that's partially on now because it's in a pod, and now there's band, and this announcement also lists that the Things I Do for Love agendas are legal, though that's not on this PDF sheet anywhere.
Yeah, it's at the bottom left. It's in that red box.
Oh, yes, it is. Sorry, I looked past it in that box for some reason. Okay, so good, it's on there. But because of the way that's arranged, I'm not sure that our usual, let's just read all the cards that went on and off, is a great way to tackle this particular beast. So what if we just acknowledge the band list, because that is probably the most clear cut. And then we take a look at each of the houses in order and just kind of talk about where they kind of sit now in light of these changes, rather than enumerating everything for each of them. Does that sound like a pretty good plan?
Sure. I think it's important to note that the ban list only really has two cards that need to be discussed, because all the previous cards were effectively banned based on how the previous restricted list worked. So we can just sort of dispense with Littlefinger's Meddling, The Dragon's Tale, Taina Meriwether, A Mission to Essos, and Two of the Rose Banner. But it's definitely worth talking about the banning of Kingdom of Shadows and Sea of Blood.
Yes. Yeah. The ones you read off in tandem, so to speak, there, I was just planning on saying that that is all just to curb combo. Those are all enablers of some kind. So that's a pretty clear cut criteria. The other two, though, that shakes things up. At this point, we've pretty much been begging for Sea of Blood to be gone for at least a year, and then another half a year begging for restriction before that.
Pretty much since it's been printed.
Yeah. And Kingdom of Shadows, I find myself torn here. It's definitely been at the top of the pool, but it's never had the long-standing oppressive reign of Sea of Blood. I don't think it's had the long-standing ire pointed at it. And as a Shaga, I'm kind of bummed to lose it. But I have to also admit that the way Shadow's design was handled in second ed, everything became very homogenous, really. The Shaga in me wants to tinker with weird, interesting Shadow stuff I can do there. But it's really just the exact same stuff for every house. I'm pulling the same set of cards, so... Yeah.
Interesting. I think you're definitely right there, Will, that King of Shadows, which may read as a Shaga agenda, ended up being a pure efficiency agenda. A package of Kingdom of Shadows, non-loyal Kingdom of Shadows cards were discovered by the best players and just sort of exported. And I think that the most interesting things in Shadows were being done out of Assault, or out of banner agendas, and that, of course, design space is still there for deck builders. I think it's interesting to me that you said that Kingdom of Shadows wasn't oppressive. I think it definitely is. It was an oppressive force in the meta. I mean, I think...
Well, just not to the sustained level of volume that Sea of Blood
had. Yeah, because I think Kingdom of Shadows... Kingdom of Shadows is not a plug-and-play agenda. It might be a plug-and-play deck, but I think Shadows is a play style that games go longer. It's a very fiddly timing based play style that doesn't appeal to every player. The way in which Sea of Blood, which, you know, there was a lot of intricacy at Sea of Blood, and there was even some intricacy in the way in which Sea of Blood decks were constructed. Like, look at the innovation that CT's team came up with, just small tweaks that CT's team came up with, and Alex Black and Francis, and that put Francis and Alex Black in the mirror match in the finals of Worlds. You know, just small tweaks in the play pattern of Sea of Blood could just really just break open the deck wide open. But at the same time, as a basic play style, it's extremely accessible. You know, the jokes that were made when I was, when we were streaming the last Nekt event, you know, play red icon, turn red icon sideways, kill your thing. You know, the basic play patterns, even though there is a lot of depth to Sea of Blood played at the highest level, the basic play patterns are very accessible. So thus you see more Sea of Blood in tournaments. So thus all the fun things that Sea of Blood does to you, blowing you out first turn, is
fun thing.
Yeah, fun things. I hope the facetiousness of my statement is coming across. I'm a big hater of Sea of Blood. Even before it was cool, I hated it. I mean, see, I can say this now. I hated it in playtesting and thought it should not have been printed. So I was hating it from the moment it was dreamed up by FFG. And I'm happy to see it go. So I think that's kind of where it is. It's the same reason why, like, hatred of Free Folk is a lot louder and more, like, ingrained in the community, despite the fact that there's been maybe two tournaments and one top tier tournament that Free Folk has ever done well in. So it's just, I think, extremely aggressive play styles, whether they're oppressive or not, tend to generate, you know, the most heat from the community.
You know, thinking of play styles, I do find it interesting that what Kingdom of Shadows does, and that play style you're talking about, is also, I think, the
Danger Will Robinson
probably game. The closest I've ever felt in any of second edition to a first ed play style. So this while this blows up one agenda at the, let's say, top end of the kind of negative second ed play style scale, it also blew up the agenda at the opposite end of that scale. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see where things settle out from here, especially since we got several new agendas to play with, but there's still an existing agenda that I'm a little worried about after this. So I'm not sure if this is the right place to discuss that, or once we delve into houses.
I mean, we can talk about that. I guess for me, the two top limits on the format were taken off, which would be really interesting to see what happens. Sea of Blood limited what you could do on a dirtily end, and really pushed decks to be able to interact early and interact around the military challenge. And while Kingdom of Shadows punished people who kind of wanted to, you know, just turn their cards sideways without, you know, very much, well, basically turn the cards sideways and not play Put to the Torch. So kind of punished mid-range decks, like traditional mid-range style playthroughs, and punished kind of like slower decks, but not passive power. But slower decks. So it'll be interesting to see where the meta ends up. My guess would be in a crossing on one hand and then a mid-range arms race on the other would be the two things that we'll see. But
yeah, crossing is the one that worries me coming up. Crossing feels like it's been teetering on that edge of being a problem for a very long time now, and occasionally has been overshadowed by something else. So, again, we're getting several new agendas to really work with in the format. So we'll see if that evens out. But I still want to keep an eye on Lords of the Crossing.
Yeah, that's one of the few cards I'd like to restrict just purely for the sake of change. Like, I don't think it's yet at the point of it being oppressive or it being so consistent that it's going to take the next X amount of top-tier tournaments. But it's been, as you said, just like kind of on that the tipping scale of like, is it gonna? And it's just, I would rather just get to the point where we just either ban or restrict it just purely for the sake of change.
I would not be surprised if it ends up restricted in the next Conclave list. Cause one of the things we didn't mention in our earlier discussion was that they've promised 3 month pattern of updates. And considering there are no new cards coming out, there won't be an emergency restricted list. So I would imagine that I would guess that in 3 months, people are going to be sick of playing against, Crossing, particularly Stark Crossing, and probably Greyjoy Crossing as well. And it will end up restricted. I think it's not powerful enough to deserve, or meta warping enough to deserve a ban, like Sea of Blood and Kingdom of Shadows.
For sure.
But definitely restrict it. And I think at that point, it's in a healthy place. Keep it away from Wyman. Keep it away.
Wyman, what did he ever do to you?
Oh, Wyman did lots of good things for me. I love Wyman, but take all those Stark cards off, and I'll have fun. But he's definitely a problematic card.
The only card that needs to come off is Mace Tyrell.
Now you're really speaking my language.
Still holding out the free Mace.
It's not going to happen now. I think there was a compromise. I think the compromise here is good. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, to see Tyrell get a bigger power spike with Hightower free, I think that there's probably some Renly deck out there, Renly based deck out there that's like Tyrell Dragon that will abuse the Hightower and its card draw, something that's running basically a bare minimum number of dragon cards to just stand Renly a bunch and just shitting out a bunch of cheap Tyrell dudes that pump strength and standing Renly or Randall would be, I think, is a place that Tyrell will be going to, think, with the Hightower back out.
Man, we are all over on the order of houses, but let's keep rolling with Tyrell, and we'll move on to other houses from there. I think that might be a possibility, but I can't help but eye the like Lady and Song stuff again now. Highgarden Minstrel, Growing Ambition, Six Maids in a Pool, and Old Town Informer all back off, depending, I suppose, on what you pick for the informer there. So you can't annals it up. But still, that really frees up a lot of pieces of stuff there in Tyrell. It is a more, quote, traditional, end quote, sort of ladies or song build, something we could put together?
Oh, God, no. Absolutely not. I mean, there's still like things that are restricted for Tyrell itself, like All Men Are Fools. That was pretty much the win condition. Like, you might get away with throwing in Lords for Renown, but I think if you're going to win with Tyrell now, it's either going to be like Knights of the Realm with Hightower or like Dark Wings with just pure efficiency, or as Roy said, like some nonsense with just like standing Randall or Renly 400 times in a challenge phase.
So there's not some kind of madness with Growing Ambition and Annals now that you can play them together again?
No, I think you're right to identify Six Maids in a Pool as one of the cards that, I mean, it's a powerful draw engine, right? The question is, I think Zach's right that losing all men as are fools is, you know, is sets the deck back as like a pure combo deck. But I mean, the ability to turn two gold into three or four cards is pretty strong. Like, I think, and with the Hightower back, I think there's probably a mid-range Tyrell shell that's built kind of like the Mace decks were around, what do people call her? Tinder Marge, Speed Dating Marge, whatever you want to say. And the ability to do that, to do lore tricks like that, and just sort of like play some of the ladies. The problem is the ladies are pretty, eh. So they might not be there. I'm actually taking a look real quick at what the lady card pool is. I haven't looked since basically the ladies cards were banned.
The cheap ladies are pretty not great. Like Desmera's fairly useless. Allery's really great, especially if you're running like Mace.
Yeah, Allery's good.
Usually, if you're gonna go ladies, you like Banner Stark for just the pure.
But if you're running Hightower, you're not bannering. Desmera, she's okay.
Yeah, two cost for a lady trait nowadays is worth it alone.
Yeah, the problem is there's, I mean, well, if the box queen of, if the nut box, if the bin pack queen of thorns was legal, the problem is there's not like a, I mean, I guess the five cost queen of thorns kind of like, or the five,
the tutor one,
the tutor one is like kind of fits into what you're trying to do. Yeah, Eleanor. Yeah, and Bran. Okay, I mean,
I mean, and especially if you do go the annals route with this, the tutor one is just another way you're filling up for an annals turn.
That's fair. And you can get the economy with the bounties not restricted anymore, right?
Correct.
So
yes, I don't think there ever was.
Was it not? Yeah,
I don't think
I can't
so
remember.
Either.
There were so many different weird Tyrell events on there that I.
Well, but bounty, and the High Garden Minstrel gives you some econ because. Many of these are songs.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, I think if you're trying to abuse Hightower to just churn through your deck, I think there might be a shell there. I definitely think that those old Mace shells are probably maybe good enough now with the like the extra mid-range characters that Tyrell got. You know, like, you're just gonna have to play a fair game. Without that, like you know, the Mace deck, when it became at its best, right before it got kind of banned out, was a mid-range deck with a combo finisher, right? Like, you would use 10 power, you would get like 10-ish power through the challenges phase, through renown, and just kind of, and then basically try to close the game without your opponent being able to interact with you. And that means you could, if you didn't see Mace or Mace got killed, still win games without having to use Mace. So I think that if you look at those old Mace shells and then compare what are the powerful Tyrell cards that were printed since there, and there have been Mark Mullen and some other things, it might be there. The deck just might be too fair for where the meta is. But I think it's definitely, there is still some power left in that shell, even without Mace. The shell you built around Mace.
Yeah, but I think it's just more efficient out of like Knights of the Realm, like running that with Mace. I mean, you get the super cheap icons, and then you get the access to Lady Sansa's Rose, and that's kind of exactly what you were describing, is either you don't see Mace and you win with your Knights, or you don't see your Knights and you win with Mace, or just running it out of Dark Wings for just efficient draw. Like, the new agendas, which I'm sure we'll get into later, are what's helping Tyrell significantly to get back. I don't think they're tier 1, but I think they're definitely tier 1.5. Like, the new agendas help out quite a bit. I'm really excited to build with Tyrell again, and I haven't felt that way in God knows how long.
Yeah, I think Dark Wings, Dark Words is a fun agenda. I think that its power level is probably too low to really be, well, not the agenda's power level. The events surrounding the agenda's power level is too low for it to be massively impactful, but I would be happy to be proven wrong.
I mean, I think it has some potential upside, but it's fairly narrow.
Yeah, it would solely be for draw's sake, which, I mean, if you're running a mace deck, like, the goal is to obviously find mace, and so running Dark Wings, you just run, like, some, you know, their shit cards, like, the Baron the Maiden Fair becomes good, like, a Rose of Gold becomes good, and just things that, like, it makes your digs just more efficient to find mace, and that's just pretty much my only thought process for it, because, like, when I ran mace pretty extensively after the box came out, there was games where you just maces in the bottom 12 cards, you know, win with renown. And so now you're at this point where you can still run the shell, and then now you just throw in more draw, which is never really a bad thing.
Yeah.
Draw equals win.
But yeah, it does. But I think making a 75 card version of a deck that can lose when you know, mace is at the bottom 12 cards of your deck, when you're piling an additional 15 cards on top of that, and then the power level of the individual events is just too low for the like economy and opportunity cost that events in second edition give you. Like, I definitely agree that, like, the zero cost events, and Tyrell has one, which I think is why Tyrell Dark Wings is probably going to be one of the better Dark Wings decks. But I think that, you know, two gold events, even one gold events, draw a card, have some marginal effect, is like not really where you want to be. Like, I think what makes Valerian Steel so powerful is, one, the neutral cards are so much better than the neutral, particularly the cheap neutral attachments are so much better than the cheap neutral events. Two, the fact that it can generate economy for you, so that there can be no tempo loss. You play a one gold attachment and you get that one gold back immediately, means that, you know, you can also play your four cost or five cost character in a way that you can with the events, because all the events do is draw you a card. I'm not saying that drawing a card is not good. I love it. It's my favorite action in a card game. But I think that that's the thing that's going to hold Dark Wings back, is that the events are awkwardly costed. They have because they cost gold, they have a much higher tempo cost than they did in first edition. And then, of course, the package of events is a lot less impactful. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of the neutral events are garbage, particularly the cheap ones. And getting enough, well, getting to the, like, I think it's like 15-ish events that you want to be running that are efficient, it's just not there. So,
yeah, ultimately, I agree with you. I think the mace shell is better out of Knights of the Realm just because you're drawing on accident. But I mean, I like, my initial argument was just to say that I think the ladies' shell isn't there. But yeah, I mean, I agree. Dark Wings, Dark Words is like a high tier two agenda. And as you said, like, I would love for someone to, you know, take seven wins in a row with it. But I think ultimately, if you're running Tyrell, it's going to be, as you said, combo with Randall Renly or Knights of the Realm, just flood the board and force, you know, three or four resets and just keep winning.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just, you know, I'm in such a weird place with, or rather the events maybe are in such a weird place in comparison to first ed, but like in general, Dark Wings, Dark Words deck, like you, to offset the larger deck size and the lack of consistency in the events, since you're running 1x on those, like you just, you have to be kind of planning to flood them out with like good stuff, efficiency of some kind, rather than any like really specific game plan like mace. So if things come together, I think they will be much more generalized than some kind of mace shell.
Sure. It's probably worth us talking about one of the other factions that got hit. So probably a good place to go from Tyrell, which was kind of at the bottom of the barrel, would be to go to a faction on the top, which is Targaryen. They were hit probably the hardest up there with Night's Watch by this restricted list. What do we think about the Targaryen changes?
Basically just on the back of Sea of Blood being restricted.
Sea of Blood being restricted, Womb being restricted, sort of.
Well,
yeah, Crown of Gold.
Womb is pod restricted, so it's actually less restricted, right? Oh, dang it, I closed the tab where I had the
I don't think April. Womb was restricted at all, right? I think that was what
Womb is pod with Kotho right now.
No, I think, but it's never been restricted, no, right?
The previous restricted list. Correct. I had it open earlier and I accidentally closed it.
Previous list didn't have it.
Yeah, that was one of the more controversial things about that restricted list. It was one of the reasons why the Spaniards all brought brought Targ, Sea of Blood to Dance of Dragons, was to prove
the point.
So there's
one card then that Womb cannot be played with.
Yeah.
Womb can't be played with Quotho and is otherwise fair game. That, I mean, when you flip the direction you're looking at that, I feel like that is a, I mean, it is a change, yes, but not as huge of a change as just like a straight restriction.
Well, it can't be played with Sea of Blood. That's the other card it can't be played with, because Sea of Blood's banned.
That was why I started with this, is mostly on the back of Sea of Blood being banned.
Yeah, I definitely got the Sea of Blood ban is, it hurts, but I mean, they just switched to Valyrian Steel. I mean, that's still a tier one deck out of Targ. Like, sure, you can't play, you know, Gifts for the Widow, but ultimately, I still think Targ is top dog, even with the ban and the restriction on the Crown of Gold and not being able to play Gifts with Dany anymore. I still think it's a very good, very consistent deck, and I don't foresee that changing with this list, at least.
Wait. Okay, what I miss, why couldn't you play Gifts in the Valyrian?
Well, you can play Gifts with Valyrian, but you can't play eight cost Dany.
Okay.
Eight cost Dany is restricted alongside Gifts. I mean, if you're going to – I mean, the thing about that pod creates an interesting tension because, like, why do you want to play Dark Valyrian Steel without Gifts of the Widow in some ways, right? I mean, I'm sure there's reasons, but, like – just looking at it, you're like, wow, that's the most busted card with Valyrian Steel. I want to play it. And the get taken away a cost Dany from them is, it's a pretty interesting cost. Of course, you can also just play Valyrian Steel with a cost Dany and then not play Gifts of the Widow. But then you make the deck less consistent. So I think there's a little bit of interesting interplay in that pod and its sort of way it circles around Valyrian Steel. And then as you pointed out, there could just be I don't think there is. I think that actually Dothraki's just going to go to Crossing rather than to Valyrian Steel.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So I think that that's kind of like two builds that you need to figure out. The question is 3x Womb worth it in a Crossing deck? I don't know. I think a lot of the Dothraki cards are not restricted anymore. I think that that's going to be, I think I mentioned earlier that Get Crossing would be something they're going to need to reinvestigate. I think that they're going to end up also needing to reinvestigate some of the cards, those Dothraki cards. I think that's still a really powerful pushed package that once Targ players get their hands on the Crossing agenda, that they, while it won't be as disruptive as the Sea of Blood deck was, it'll just be fast. So instead of being uninteractive, well, not so true. Instead of being overly interactive, like the Sea of Blood deck was, this will just be uninteractive because it's so fast.
Overly interactive. I like that. It interacts so much that you become uninteractive.
Yes. That is definitely what playing against a two-claim turn one with a put to the sword challenge against Dothraki felt like. So
yeah, well, that's if you're lucky and it was only the one military challenge.
That's fair. But yeah. I think,
I mean, Crown I think of Gold Targaryen goes. Still comes out of this in a pretty good spot, even with Sea of Blood pulled. I definitely agree with Roy that Crossing is something to watch, though I was doing a little digging just now to double check if the choice between Kotho and Womb was kind of a legit choice, so to speak, for them due to the icon loss. Because mentally I was thinking that they were real hard on the military icon. There's a lot more power in intrigue icons than I was recalling. That is, if they are willing to kind of stretch out to things like, say, Dothraki Handmaiden or Eerie or something, which I think is very reasonable for them to do, like very low cost strength bicons on those. I think they will round out their icon curve pretty easily.
Yeah, Targ's always been able to do that. Their icon spread, even from the core set, was just fantastic. And it was like, I mean, they've won worlds with Crossing already, so I can imagine getting your characters for essentially free now is going to improve that, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't foresee Tar getting knocked off the high horse with this list.
Yeah. Oh, me neither. So, gosh, we've hit kind of the top and bottom ends of this scale, and we conveniently also picked the two like middle houses as far as the order these are listed in on the restricted list sheet of paper. Though also now, because of that, I realize I don't know what order they are listed in. They're not alphabetical. No. They're not by the like number of entries. I don't know. I guess maybe they're just in an order to try to make the layout work so the columns are the same size.
Yeah, maybe it's got to be like a... I don't even know. Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I can't... maybe just because neutral has more, they want it in the bottom right for some reason.
Yeah. I think it just had to do with spacing. It must have been spacing. Weird. Well, while we're bouncing around here then, let's take a look at... some of these other factions that changed, that their entries changed very little. So let's hit up Lannister next. Their only restricted card now is the Red Keep. I'm still a little miffed about that, but I can at least understand the fact that it's not loyal is really the problem here.
Wait, what? No. That card should never have been printed.
It's perfectly fine. It is perfectly fine.
Not perfectly fine. What
royalist is coming out of you?
Yeah. It is not perfectly fine. I played Lannister HRD with Red Keep, all red cards. That card is not fair. And it's just not a fair card. It should never have been printed. The fact that it could cancel basically everything in the game that's on an event and a plot is really stupid. Like, it's just every turn, like, it's just dumb. It's just, it shouldn't have been printed. It should be on the ban list, to be honest with you. Like,
I'm not going to get on board with that, because like, Lannister definitely does not need that
here. Like, Lannister needs some things to help it. Like, I agree with you. For Oktoberfest last year, I played Lannister Valyrian Steel. I really enjoyed it. Lannister cards suck, but it does. There's lots of cool, fun things that Lannister can do at this point. Besides, you know, the old Joe Mirando Smash Bros style play that it had for a long time, but it's just its card pool is so low. But the Red Keep is not the answer to Lannister's problems.
It is not. I would have rather that Lannister have gotten more like good to slightly better than good cards rather than one bomb, because I don't know. It's a healthier way to design for another, but also like we don't have the tools coming to offset that imbalance. You just ban the Red Keep and then, okay, well, Lannister still just has a whole bunch of subpar cards and you just,
I mean,
tread water.
No,
but that wasn't really the
if you want to play red cards,
main thing I wanted to debate with Lannister.
If you want to play red cards, you can just play HRD Bowels, right? That's the draw or get gold, yeah, card. Gold. I always forget which one it is, but like, they all look the same.
That's Bowels of the Red Keep.
Just play that card. Like Lannister does have a tier one deck. That deck did not get significantly worse. It remains probably out of the box the only playable Shadows agenda. That comes out there. So if you like red cards, you even have a almost balanced Red Keep in the form of Alchemist Guild Hall. And that, of course, is still barely balanced. It's not really a balanced card, but it's definitely like one of the best things to happen for Alchemist Guild Hall was that the Red Keep came out and you realized how much worse it could be. So you're like, yeah, okay, you can Alchemist Guild Hall me. That's cool. Just thank God it's not Red Keep. So, yeah. So Lannister's still playable. Like, you can't be Tywin one drop, zero reducering people if that's what you want to be doing. But red cards are playable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, mainly I think the ban on Sea of Blood was a big help out of this restricted list for Lannister. Even if they are losing the Kingdom of Shadows power, in general, Lannister has either been pretty slow and kind of like need to set up and build out some income base with some of those shadow decks. If you're going like trade routes or something, or they're trying to rush out with like kind of inherent card disadvantage type stuff, which meant that either way you sliced it, the intense aggro of Sea of Blood with the kill and the easy on-demand location destruction of Put to the Torch was a problem when it got rolling. So I think this is a big boon for them to not have to worry about trying to stave that off in the early game.
Yeah, I mean, I said my piece about red cards. I think you're right that Sea of Blood was a pretty powerful predator against Lannister. So that being gone, I think maybe there's some space to explore mid-range Lannister decks. So, yeah, I think if you want to play red cards, you can still play Shadows as well. So all things considered, Lannister could be in a worse... It's not the worst spot Lannister's ever been in. So
definitely
in recent times.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely not the best, thank God, but it's definitely it's definitely up there.
Okay, what about the next one with a small entry below that, Baratheon? How are they looking at this point? Not much changed in regards to them. Like they had no entries on or off, right?
No, Solis was on the last one, I'm pretty sure.
Right, right. So nothing directly for them this time around. Mm-hmm. So how do they stack up with the rest of the meta then?
I find it weird that this was the instance they didn't use a pod. Because I feel like Baratheon was like kind of made for that. Because like the Azor Ahai deck is very good, and also the Cohort deck, which is almost one and the same, is very good as well. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of in that same boat where you guys are saying Crossing was, where it's like on the edge of just like being really, really good. So I feel like they went a little light with Baratheon. I definitely think they could have used a pod restriction here with like Solis going into like Big Bob or going into Stan, like seven or the box Stannis. I definitely think they could have added at least one or two things here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think that that deck should go away. I've said that many times on this show. I've said that on coverage. I think that that's easily one of the least fun decks to play against. And I think that it's, I don't think it's been somewhat unleashed here a little bit. It is, of course, more you can interact with it more, because of course, you know, it can't have Forced March with King in the North anymore. And Solace is away from it, or if Solace is your restricted card, you lose access to these other things. So there's definitely some of the power has been taken out of it, but two of its natural predators, or really one of its natural predators, Sea of Blood, is out now. And so the question is, like, that gives it more opportunities to recover when it stumbles in the meta, and that's dangerous. But I think that Baratheon, before I move on to broader Baratheon, I think that the willingness of them to let that exist in the meta shows something that, like, Schoenthal kind of hinted at, or that I wish I had caused him to expand on a little bit more. But I think there's a willingness among Hanno and CT and other people on the Conclave to, like, keep the power level of the format high, and they're willing to take risks. I think that unrestricting some of those ladies cards that we talked about earlier are risks. Nothing may happen. It'll be fine. But they are willing to keep the format at a higher power level. Compare it to, for example, our colleague Aaron Glazer's attitude towards restricted lists, which is, you know, a much more, you know, heavy-handed, like, really take the heat out of the format. This is definitely showing that the Conclave falls on the other side of things, where that they want people to still be playing at a higher power level than some people are comfortable with. And the Bera list really highlights that. Second, but Bera in general, even if they banned the Azor Ahai list, I think Bera is in a really good spot with this list. With Sea of Blood being gone, with King of Shadows being gone, like, the Bera themes everyone loves, like passive power, are very alive and well. It's still powerful. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see where Bera Maesters goes. I think Bera Maesters is one of the more undervalued decks in the meta. It was set up really well to float and fight with Sea of Blood, and so I'd be interesting to see where it shifts when it can take some of those kind of bad cards in other matchups, but really good again, but necessary so you survive Sea of Blood. You know, they can leave your deck and maybe be replaced with more powerful cards. I'd be love to see where that deck goes from there. So I think Bera's in a really good spot, even not even thinking about the stupid R'hllor deck.
You do not sound enthused about that.
The R'hllor deck, I'm not enthused about. I love Bera Maesters. I almost played it at Worlds. So if I didn't, I wish I actually had. I'm pretty sure I would have had much more fun than I ended up having. So I love watching that deck. So
all right. Let's see. Where else does that put us? Martell next, I think. Let's see. What happened for Martell? They gained Tower and the Red Viper from the core set back. Otherwise, not much of a change here. But is there a Hyper Viper possibility now? Maybe not like a one-turn combo kind of thing, but also maybe yes. I mean, they could go in on Annals. Question, I guess, is getting You Murdered Her Children in time.
I mean, I don't foresee it coming back. I mean, if someone's running Hyper Viper, it's because they previously ran it and have had the success where you get them up to 10 billion strength. And unless you're doing that OTK, I just don't see running like a combo light, because He's honestly not that great of like a card outside of combo, in my opinion.
Oh, so yeah, I definitely agree.
I don't foresee you. Yeah, I just don't see people building into that. It just doesn't seem consistent. Like, you're gonna have those games where, yeah, you just blow your opponent out of the water, and then your opponent like just, you know, rage quits on Iron Throne and complains about you. But I mean, it's not gonna happen more often than not. You're not gonna take a tournament with it. There's no way you win 7 games consistently with it.
Oh, well, I had hopes. What about Martell's Shadows or, Wars? Does Wars make any sort of resurgence? Nothing really has changed directly there.
I mean, Wars has always firmly been like a tier 2, tier 1.5, very playable, powerful deck that has some strong Predators in the meta. Some of those Predators are gone. Like Sea of Blood. Some of them aren't, like really fast decks. So I think that people will still play Martell Wars. They may or may not play the 7-cost Viper in that. I think it'll be fine. Like, Martell Wars is, you know, kind of like just the acceptable Martell deck. It's interesting that you talked about Hyper Viper. I agree mostly with Zach, but I do think that it is within the realm of possibility that someone will figure out ways to abuse the card pool to create, maybe not where it was when it ran over that Worlds, the Wonder Woman, you know, where the basically felt like the only four decks in that entire tournament: Wonder Woman, Hyper Viper, Greyjoy, Fast Greyjoy, and Fast Targ. I don't think that we are quite at the point where it's at that level of consistency, but it could end up being a lot closer to the where the Tyrell Dragon was, which is that it could do a combo kill in turn 1 or turn 2, but more consistently could win in a combo-ish way turn 3 or 4. Martell has a bunch of decks like that. It's got the Martell Kraken. It has, what's the other one? Martell Stag, I think, is the other one. I can't remember. Glazer was talking about it on the show that we did. I think that those decks are still very much alive. Maybe it's Martell Lion, actually, I think that the combo's in. I don't know. So I think that there's still some Martell rogue decks that are really uninteractive that could end up making splashes if people take the energy to find them.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. I feel like Martell has kind of been a dark horse lately, and somehow the tweaks to this restricted list don't really make me any more or less excited to explore the space that Martell is in right now.
Yeah, same. It's just they took a very lateral movement with this restriction list. Like, with Tyrell, they got, you know, sexy new shiny stuff. For Martell, it's like, sweet, you get a subpar car back, like Yahoo question mark. Like, it's definitely not the sexiest thing to play with right now.
Oh, well. You know who might be sexy? Stark.
Oh, I thought you were going to, like, just say yourself. Like, point, you know. Friends, you know?
Dang. So close. So close. I mean, they get Skagos like 3/4 back.
They get it back. They get it back.
yeah. Just not with Wyman.
Or Owen Scout. Yeah, like, for sure. They also take like a primarily lateral move here. Like, they definitely still are good. Like, Stark Crossing is not going to be bad anytime soon. But Yeah, it's Skagos. Having Skagos and Mira back alone is going to win games.
I mean, yeah, that gives them a lot of flexibility. But if they are going that direction, I'm curious, like, what's their agenda choice at this point? I mean, I feel like Crossing had long been one of their strong choices. Just losing I Am No One, if you roll Wyman, then, like, does that rein that in enough that they look a different direction?
I think that there's this dark fealty build that's just a mid-range build that you can build. That's I use the word build a lot, that you can create pretty easily out of this. It was what Glazer, Chris, and I were talking about. I'm sure the Stark Crossing aficionados like Derek Shoemaker, Stephen Ebrey, will figure it out. Like, losing I Am No One sucks, but there's probably something else that you can do. I mean, there's still all that renown and consistency is still there in Stark. And I would definitely, a Mira Reed based Stark fealty is definitely good. It may even be, like a combo cat list, something like what was floating around at the beginning of last year. That deck really loved Wyman, but I think you could find some other ways to build, some other, tweak the shell a little bit and go back to cat and, you know, sacrificing tons of stuff and using Mira to deal with threats and just, you know, you didn't have Alisane in that deck. And so the fact that it gives you an extra avenue of challenges attack could make it very, very consistent and powerful. So,
yeah, for sure. It's Mira. I mean, I said earlier, just those cards alone, Mira and Skagos, is why Stark is trending slightly upwards and or this is a lateral movement. Like, they got hit pretty hard losing I Have No One, but I mean, Mira is just such a powerful card, and being able to run her in conjunction with Skagos is pretty much going to nullify any negative impact the restricted list is going to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think they gain a lot of flexibility with getting Skagos mostly back, right? A lot of flexibility. They sacrifice some speed, I suppose, with I Am No One, but that trade-off looks pretty good for them. Sorry, I'm trying to weigh here, looking at the houses. Maybe we should continue through the last couple houses before I finish that particular thought. Basically, I'm trying to figure out a quick and dirty ranking of the houses. So let's take a look at the last couple before diving into something like that. We have up next, how about Night's Watch? They also get Halder restricted and some half and half stuff on Kraven and Three-Fingered Hob. If you want to go with Yoren, gosh, is that enough of a trade-off? You just always keep playing Yoren, right?
For sure.
Yeah. This is definitely a place where I just really despise Take Control as a game mechanic, particularly the way it became increasingly handled in Game of Thrones, where it's just some kind of permanent thing that just happens. Goodbye. And I think this is the type of thing, if really like bad, like negative play experience design space were to be banned, this is the sort of thing I would look at. That's what I wish had happened here. Realistically speaking, I don't think this is a huge, terrible change for them.
Not really. I mean, I get why Halder got added, but I just felt like Builders was falling off, so it's kind of like a kick in the ass as they're taking a hit.
I think Halder's on there for Valerian Steel's sins, I think. It's an attempt to...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that as well, but for sure.
Power level down. I mean, Builders is one of those decks that I think is firmly... It's one of those... Builders is one of those very divisive, powerful decks that... some people are always afraid of, whether or not it's actually good in the meta, because they just view it as, you know, this is something Will and I went back and forth a bunch about in the last traditional white book episode that we did.
I think so.
Our colleague Aaron is also one of these people. Aaron is always saying Builders is like the best deck, even times when everyone else who's talking to him can prove to him that it is not. He's still like, no, it's the best deck. Like, he's always afraid that it's going to, he just hates it so much. But I think it's here, it's suffering for Valerian Steel Sins. And it's, I think, an attempt to try to bring the power level to keep it in check, to make sure that, you know, with some of its predators, Kingdom of Shadows and Sea of Blood, out of the meta, to make sure that Builders doesn't just take over, because it is possible that if the deck gets into a, like, Builders is really good when mid-range decks get into a mid-range off where they always are trying to constantly go up over each other constantly, because you can just put a Kraven on two of their threats, and then with their other threat you just win the challenge with the abandoned stronghold and you're fine. You know, because in those mid-range offs, it's usually just like who can get the biggest beef and stick the biggest beef. And that's where Builders shines. And if that's where the meta's heading, and there's a good chance like that that's what their playtesting showed, based on this list, that's what I would predict. But, you know, they're afraid that Builders could just be too good. And so better safe than sorry. And it has the added benefit of also making Valerian Steel slightly worse without having to restrict the agenda. So yeah, I think that's why Halder's on there.
Gotcha.
But I don't think Builders is all that great.
Yeah, overall though, I think it's kind of like the last couple houses. It's pretty lateral move. Like, sure, Halder gets added on, but like three fingers back, and you know, you're happy about that.
Yeah, Hob being set free to do his three-fingered way is it's interesting. I expect to see Night's Watch remain powerful, but not oppressive would be the way I would say Night's Watch is.
Yeah, I think I feel about the same way as Martell. I think I agree with Zach about it being a lateral move, and maybe that's why it doesn't particularly excite me to explore anything here. It's not a new ground or a new place in the meta to be looking at, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, it just leaves us with Greyjoy. So let's see. Do we get anything back? Oh yeah, Drowned Disciple, though it's still 0.2% restricted or something like that with
it's probably drowned. Correct math.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to say that I worked that out with some really detailed Excel charts and graphs, but I definitely did.
Yeah, I'm in the playtesting group. Hano specifically typed in there, I want us restricted 0.2%.
Well, you know, if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were explicit. I think Hano in his list, in his article, and Chris on our show that we did when we interviewed him, talked about how they wanted to try to keep a Drown God deck alive. And the restrictions here of both Drowned Disciple with Desert Raider and Drowned Disciple with Drown God Fanatic is meant to let you still play Drowned Disciple if you want, which I feel like that's kind of the worst of both worlds, where it lets people play Drown God with this neutered version that's not fun if you enjoyed playing Drown God, and then also runs the risk that someone will figure out how to play a Drown God deck that everybody hated. So either you end up in a situation with the lovers of Drown God don't get what they want, or you end up in a situation where the haters of Drown God don't get what they want, instead of just saying, look, we're just not supporting this theme anymore. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
That's where I go with it. Like, either free Drown God or don't. If you think it's a bad play pattern, just ban it. Whether that's through restricting or just ban Drown Disciple or whatever you want to do. I think kind of like half arsing it is not really fun.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier with what do you do about champ cards? And the Drown God archetype gets caught up in the crossfire with two champ cards here. One with like obviously intended interactions with the Drown God theme. One with, I think, obviously unintended interactions with the Drown God theme. And that leaves the deck as a whole in a really weird place as far as how you try to tackle it in a way that it is still playable, potentially without the champ cards, but without removing the champ cards from the pool to be played elsewhere. It's a bad spot to be in.
Yeah, except the problem is Drowned Disciple, right? Like, the problems of Desert Raider and the problems of Drown God Fanatic, they are separate problems from the Drown God problem. The Drown God problem is Drowned Disciple, because it's the, as a competitive player, it's literally the only reason to play Drown God as a theme. Like, there's cool things you can do by bringing stuff out of your, that one's almost a graveyard, dead pile. But it, pardon my French, doesn't mean shit most of the time without Drowned Disciple. It's like a fun thing you can do. Maybe, oh my God, what's his name? Tarl, there we go. Tarl is like kind of a value engine, but he's not that great when you're not claiming power, right? Like, what made Drowned God such a powerful theme is Drowned Disciple. That's what made it fun. Like, that, as soon as this card was printed, even before the busted cards that were supported, I loved Drowned Disciple. Like, that's what Sean Emberley loved about it. Like, the fact that it had this uninteractive power grab game. Like, that's what made it fun. Most Thrones players don't find that fun. They don't want it in their game. That's fine. Just don't have it in the game. That's okay. We can all, like, that's okay. But I think that this halfway that they want it in there, but they don't, and it's so neutered to the point of which, like, it's not fun for the people who want to play that card. That's the problem. Ban Drowned Disciple, come up with something interesting for Drowned God to do after in the future. That's what I think. But
yeah, maybe they will tackle that once we reach the capability of new cards. I mean, without Drowned Disciple completely, you have a wide swath of these Drowned God cards and kind of moving pieces that, like, just don't get played at all, right?
Yeah, without the Disciple, you're just not playing Drowned God. Like Roy said, it nothing matters if you're doing all these cute, sexy tricks. If you don't get anything from it, like, you just look cool, which only gets you so far in a Game of Thrones match.
Yeah. Which I think is probably part of the catch 22 here. I bet there was some reticence to invalidate all the rest of those cards. Invalidate might not be quite the right word here, but to make them, I don't know, insignificantly playable. And I think that type of mindset lines up pretty well with the questionable restriction on Crown of Gold, in that they are trying to preserve whatever level of like technical allowable playability for cards, even if it is not necessarily like real world usage case scenarios. So that at least is consistent, I think, in the way they're tackling this.
Yeah, I mean, it's personally, it's weird that, again, kind of saying what Roy said, that they half-ass this, but take like a full stance on like Mace. Like, at what point in time, like, are you saying passive power isn't allowed? Like, obviously, Drowned God passive power was fairly more consistent than Mace without Hightower. I mean, if you had Hightower, Mace was the go-to, but it's weird that passive power wise they're like picking and choosing what's the pain in the ass and what are they, you know, putting their foot down and what are they kind of like just still letting you dangle the carrot, like, maybe you can do this, you might be able to do it, try it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And like Roy said, the Baratheon passive power stuff is still around. You know, Builders, Night's Watch, Wall flavored varieties are still around. So maybe that is something I would really like to pick Hanno's brain on, is what we want to see in the game. Like, if passive power is allowable, like, what is the proper rate of speed or amount of power that can be gained? I don't know. It seems like there must be some kind of line there, like you said, Zach, but I think that would be an interesting discussion to find out.
I think that reverse engineering, again, this is not, I don't have any secret information. I would say reverse engineering from this list, I would say that this group is the Wall and Chamber Chair is acceptable where passive power is. Because like trying to stop the Drowned God, stopping Mace, you know, the ability to gain a lot of power really quickly, they're like, we're going to keep those strategies, particularly where it's really difficult to interact outside of the challenges phase with those. Mace is one version and Drowned God is an even less interactive because like you can, Mace can only give you one power in Martial Lane, and then one power in Dominance. While Drowned God can get you, what? Save three, can get you, what, six power in Martial Lane? It can get you over a third of the way through your win condition if everything lines up in Martial Lane. So I can definitely see that that's where they sit. And I think this is where, again, you and I are going to disagree. I think if you just get rid of passive power, you kill second edition. It is a part of the game and not everybody loves it. Like, but it's existed in the card pool since day one. There are plenty of people who enjoy that play style. I think keeping it at a measured level and saying like, look, this is our goal. Sometimes we're going to overshoot it. Sometimes we're going to undershoot it, but this is where we want it, is perfectly acceptable. But I think you just can't blow the theme up entirely out of the card pool without just changing second edition in a fundamental way. And I think this is okay, like, for where passive power is. I just wish that if they don't want Drowned God style decks, just say, we don't want Drowned God style decks in our game. That's perfectly fair point of view. It's defensible point of view.
Yeah. I don't think we're necessarily as far apart on that sort of thing as you might have thought. I am honestly in favor of passive power. I love playing Mace. Actually, I think this episode is just lousy with hosts that loved playing Mace. All three of us, I think, played a lot of it. But yeah, the personal line for me has to do with ones that not only are also, or sorry, not only are trying to reach their own passive plan, their own path to power outside of the usual challenge scheme that, let's say, quote, fair, end quote, decks do, but where their method of doing it also like inherently invalidates the way the fair decks would be getting there. So I don't mind passive power, like say dominance or mace, but I do think that the stalling effects of defensive power or military challenge negating effects of Drowned God are where the issues are. But, oh well. Greyjoy as a whole, are they about where they were before? I think they were in a pretty good spot in the meta. They had formerly, of course, had good Sea of Blood builds, but the limelight had been taken by Targaryen, with Targ taking a half a step back. Does Greyjoy step up a little bit, or are they overall in a pretty, let's say, lateral space, as Zach has kind of been saying?
I think they're better because of what happened to other houses, like the ban on Shadow and or Kingdom of Shadow and Sea of Blood puts them in a way better position, because now you can not really care about like the tricks that Shadows is going to do to you. Like, you can, like, Greyjoy is still kind of the Sea of Blood mindset, where you turn cards sideways. If do they say renown? Do you have warships? All right, you're probably going to win.
Yeah, Greyjoy is still Greyjoy. It's probably slightly better. Expect to see a lot of Greyjoy crossing. Yeah.
We just keep coming back to crossing for a lot of these houses, I'm noting.
It's almost like you warned us about this.
Yeah. Huh. Go figure. Well, we'll see. We'll see where the next restricted list takes us then. I would not be terribly surprised.
Free Mace. Find
crossing on there. I really do hope for a freed Mace. But, like, overall,
boys, it's never happening. Like,
I know, but I wanted to.
Well, I mean, look, to be fair, you know, the Conclave is now a democratic organization. So you can run on a free Mace platform. I guess I don't remember how long the terms are. I think it's 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
Yeah, so in 2 years, you can run against Hanno or CT and say, or Schoenthal, and say, I'm running on a hashtag free Mace. That is my my platform.
The one plank in my platform.
But see where that gets you in the community. I have a feeling it would not be very far, but, you know, the Thrones community never ceases to surprise me.
You know, in 2 years, who knows where it might be. Zach and I, you know, clamoring for Freed Mace might be the only people left at that point.
If I get one vote, that's enough votes for me.
That's a moral victory right there.
So as soon as Mace gets freed, I don't want to put this out there permanently because this is, could be dangerous, but I'd consider getting a tattoo.
Oh, that will definitely go out there permanently.
The free Mace challenge.
Yep. Oh, geez. Well, other than Mace not being freed, I've got to say I really, really like this restricted list. I was not one of the folks on board with the pod concept. I think I probably would have just pushed for a heavier band list use. But overall, I like what this does to the metagame. Like, there are several things I'm interested and excited to explore right now. Some of that, of course, is the addition of the things I do for Love Agendas. But some of it, like Hyper Viper or Ladies or something, is specifically due to tweaks of things coming on and off. So I'm excited.
Yeah, overall, this list is phenomenal, and Conclave did a super, super good job. My only complaints are, like, minor personal complaints. Like, it's just a great list overall.
Are you calling Mace just a personal complaint?
I mean, it's personal because he's been such an aspiration in my life, and that I need, like, I know my love for Mace runs deeper than most people. And so I'll consider it personal. It's a slight against me. You know what? I take it back. This list sucks, and I want Mace back, and I'm announcing my running. Roy has inspired me. 2022, free Mace.
You know, actually, Zach, you might as well just start campaigning now. If I've learned anything from the modern political climate, the longer you run for office, the better.
Yeah, if this episode is not titled Freemace 2022 hashtag tattoo, I would lose it.
Okay, well, we'll see what we can do.
You started cutting out pretty hard, Will. I didn't hear you.
Nothing. I definitely did not promise that the episode would have that name. All right. Any parting thoughts, anybody, or is that our danger zone?
I mean, I definitely feel like running a concerted political campaign to free Mace puts us in the danger zone. But
we're welcome to disagree with me. Danger zone.